Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. My name is David Langiuli.
And I'm Janice Cumming. And David, we're excited to have a guest today. We have my friend from Toronto, Emma Luzzi, who is the founder of Blue Sky Philanthropy. So welcome, Emma.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
So Emma, why don't you, just before we kick off and get into our big conversation, tell us what Blue Sky Philanthropy is. I love that name, by the way. So I always wonder what the origin story of it was.
And we're all wearing blue. That right. Was totally by coincidence.
It's got a great origin story, but I don't know if it's, do you want to hear it now?
The quick version. Yeah, I do.
The quick version. Okay. So the quick version is that I'd founded the company about 4 years ago, and I was stumped on a name. So I thought, I don't want to be Emma Luzzi and Associates, just because also I thought I want something a little more creative. So yeah. My partner is a creative and a writer. And so we were making dinner and chatting, and she said, well, you know, let's talk about this over dinner. You know what? It's great. We'll have a blue sky session on what to name your company. And I said, that's it.
Yes, session done.
Blue sky.
Oh, let's go drink some wine now and celebrate.
So I thought that was a fun story where it was just like, yeah, we're going to have a blue sky session. And I was like, that's the thing. That's the thing. You just know it sometimes when you hear it. I thought it seems really perfect and aspirational and inspirational, which are two things I think that are important to me in my business. For sure.
Yeah. So what is it that you do?
I'll get to that now. So I work with fundraisers and nonprofit leaders to help them raise more 5, 6, and 7-figure donations for their amazing missions, in a nutshell.
Great.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm also aware that you are interested in management and leadership topics, which is, of course, why you came on the podcast, and you wrote a lovely article for our audience on managing up. So, and I'm aware, I was like, when I was reading your article, I was like, I wonder if she's going to say anything about kissing up. And I was like, I was amazed that towards the end you said managing up is not kissing up. So if it's not kissing up, what is it, Emma?
Well, you know what? I talk about it, and it's interesting that you raise, you're a fundraiser and a major gift fundraiser. And I think the connection there for me is that, you know, great leadership and managing up is so important to good fundraising, and especially important to being effective in major gifts. So that for me is the connection. I think that everything I'm talking about today is what I call road tested. So at some point in my 20-year frontline fundraising career, I have come through trial and error, which we can talk about as well, just to understand a little bit more about managing up and what it is and why it's important. So I think of managing up as being another facet or another dimension of leadership. So essentially, you are simply enabling and supporting the team members that are around you, because you have team members above you as well. In the hierarchy, you're just simply enabling them to be as effective as possible in their role. And that to me means like it really represents an amazing opportunity. And it's something that you will use throughout your career. You will never stop managing up. I think people think, well, you know, if I become a CEO, I'm done. I'm at the top. No, let me tell you what happens then. You're probably managing up a multiple member board of directors, right? So your managing up responsibilities actually increase as you move up the organization. So the sooner you can start practicing managing up and just really supporting and understanding and enabling those folks you report to, your boss or your board of directors, to be more effective and more fulfilled even in their role, the better. Yeah, it's a great, it's a practice really, and it takes practice.
Yeah, and I will say, a lot of my coaching clients, it comes up a lot. I think it's a big topic, and what I loved from what you just said was, not only does it not go away, but it actually becomes more complex, like yes. the higher up the ladder you go, the more complex it is. I was struck by, I especially love like the first few questions you asked were like, what do they want to achieve, but then what's motivating them? And you made the distinction that sometimes those two can be different. Dive into that a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was talking about the first thing you want to understand when you're managing up is what your boss or your board member wants to achieve. So essentially just thinking about and being really curious about and asking great questions about what they want to achieve in their role. And that will make you, unto itself, will make you stand out, you know? And I think if you come from a place of true curiosity, and ask these questions respectfully, it can be such a useful tool for you. I feel like a lot of folks are hesitant to ask questions of those that they report to. They feel like, oh, I don't want to feel like I'm interrogating them or it's going to be a little bit weird. But if you practice it and do it well, I think every boss appreciates that, right? Is their direct reports trying to understand a little bit more about, like, you know, what goals are important for you this year and what do you want to achieve in your role? One question I suggested people ask, you know, is what keeps you up at night? Like, what is most stressful about your responsibilities in this role? You can get so much insight out of asking.
You asking me stupid questions.
Hopefully you don't have that boss. Yeah, hopefully you don't have that boss. And you can warm up, right? You can warm up in terms of like building a little more trust before you start getting into the what keeps you up at night. You know, use your judgment, but just even like, what are your, you know, those more tactical pieces, like what are your priorities for this quarter? What are your priorities for this year? So uncovering what they want to achieve is step one. And then the mm-hmm. distinction between that and what's motivating them, understanding what's motivating them, I say that those are very different things. And I shared an example that I've seen happening quite commonly right now. I've talked with a lot of fundraisers who have been experiencing a board of directors that have pressed pause on fundraising because they believe it's inappropriate or insensitive to be fundraising right now. So, you know, that to me, I use that as an example because that to me is a great example of what they want to achieve being in direct conflict with what is actually motivating them. So for a board, it's, you know, one of their most, you know, one of their most important responsibilities is to be ensuring financial stability of the organization. Yet making the decision to stop fundraising does not directly support that. And what's motivating them there is typically assumptions about donors, assumptions about how donors are going to react, which is essentially like founded in fear to mm-hmm. some degree. What are donors going to think if we ask them for donations right now? And how are they going to react? And I've seen these decisions being made without actually speaking to donors, which has been very interesting. So that's an example I see happening commonly where what someone wants is in direct conflict with what they want to achieve. Because mm-hmm. yeah. That can be a hard distinction to really understand. But yeah. I see that popping up in managing up relationships fairly often.
Yeah. And it's reminding me, you know, right now, especially David's sort of been doing a lot of work about mindset. We have a special program mm-hmm. and that's what it's reminding me of, David, right? Like it's sort of yeah. like your motivation can be positive, but sometimes your motivation is fear or another, what we refer to as saboteurs.
Saboteurs. It's a way mm-hmm. you sabotage yourself. And a lot of those behaviors, like the one you are identifying, Emma, is motivated by fear. And once you get to the heart of that, it can be really helpful to say, oh, okay, yeah, we're afraid right now. Okay, let's just be with that for a little while and then you can get beyond it. Yeah. Right? When you realize, wait a minute, we haven't spoken with any donors about this. Let's go talk to them and see what they have to say.
Yeah, exactly. And as I'm so glad with that, you know, in our industry, we're starting to talk about mindset a lot more, because I feel like we're late to this conversation in a lot of ways. And it's interesting in my work that I find people often believe, you know, if they're not meeting a goal, it's around like a tactical issue. And it can sometimes be a skills or a tactics gap, but oftentimes it can be a mindset or limiting belief issue. Yes. That's actually really the thing that's causing the problem. So I'm really glad that we're starting to talk and teach about that, in addition to talking about like the tactics and the how-to and the strategy, because you can know all of that, but if you believe that your donors are going to think that you're insensitive and inappropriate if you're fundraising from them, all the tactics in the world are not going to help you. So bringing it back to the managing up piece, it tends to be trickier. You know, it's easier for us, for example, in a relationship, say with our coach, or if we're doing like a little bit of self-reflecting, it's easier for us to say like, oh, I see like there's a fear might be motivating my actions right now. It's more difficult in the managing up relationship to say to your board, like, you're just scared, right? So in this case, what I recommend is that you recognize it, but how you actually tackle it is around introducing social proof, right? Mm-hmm. So that can be a really helpful way when you recognize what's motivating them. You know, if you don't have a relationship that necessarily puts you in a place where you can say it's fear that's motivating. Some people may, if you're a CEO mm-hmm. or an ED and you've got a close relationship with your board, you may be able to speak frankly with them. If you aren't able to speak frankly with them, and even if you are able to speak frankly, introducing social proof into the managing up relationship can be a really useful way to shift perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a lot of I will speak for myself personally. I've seen a lot of my friends in fundraising doing exactly that, like coming together, having those conversations, like doing the research to figure out who is fundraising, how it's mm-hmm. being accepted, right. How it's being successful. So that's a great point that you're making. Like, I liked how you tied it, Emma, to it's a way of showing a different perspective, but it's for some people it needs to be that, like X, Y, and Z are doing this and it's working.
Yeah. And this is where I think consultants really earn, fundraising consultants, especially like you, Emma, really earn their fees in being able to share with the board, or even if your major gifts officer or heading up the fundraising, chief development officer reporting to the CEO, if you can engage with a consultant like you who's working with other nonprofits who are out there raising money, and you know, you're in this fear base, not going to make any ass right now, you could just go and get some advice and say, what are other people doing right now? Oh, you mean to say all of our peers are out there raising money and we're not? Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Social proof is such an interesting thing. And I think there's so many ways to use it. Like bringing in a consultant is a way to accelerate things for sure. Yeah, but yeah. If you don't have the budget for that, you can think absolutely about case studies, about pointing, you know, to another organization's website and seeing what they're doing. But really, like the concept around social proof is that humans ultimately are looking to other humans to see what the right action to take is, right? Yeah. So if you can help your board, following through on that example, see what actions others, especially peers, are taking, I think that will go a really long way in terms of motivating folks, and can be a softer way to kind of shift their perspective without them realizing that you're in there trying to shift their perspective, if you will.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's anything nefarious about wanting to, I think this is where candor comes in, and Janice and I do a lot of work around, being straight, or I forget the word you used, being honest, but you could just say, well, you know, we're here to raise money. We're here to keep the organization financially fit during these troubling times. I'm going to call a few of my other chief development officers in similar organizations and see what they're up to, and I'll just report back. That's it. I'll just be completely candid with you. With if they report back that they're also not seeing this as a good time, I'll share that. Yeah. You can give exact quotes. Yeah,
I think that really, I mean, that's sort of, to me, there's a nice connection to your fourth point, which is about bringing solutions to the table, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have those solutions within ourselves, and sometimes it's a matter of going out and seeking out consultants, other, you know, or organizations, and trying to figure out what are people doing successfully.
For sure. And I, just before we leave the social proof point, like, I agree with you on candor. Being candid tends to get easier the higher up you get in the hierarchy. So I'm always, you know, sharing, like, it's great if you can be direct, but sometimes you do have to be a little more strategic or diplomatic, depending upon where you are in the organization and where you're placed. So yeah, I agree 100% around candor. Sometimes there's a little more navigation you need to do depending upon where you are in the organization. As someone who's been in a frontline fundraising role, who may sometimes, for example, in my case, I was often working with board members who were essentially in that organization my boss's boss's boss. So, you know, they're sort of three levels removed from me. So that required extremely diplomatic and sometimes subtle managing up skills. So I'll totally agree with you on the candor. Depending upon where you're placed in the organization and who you're working with, you do need to sort of measure out that carefully, I will say. Especially if you're working in a very hierarchical organization. It's funny, I've worked in very small shops and very large shops and very flat organizations and very hierarchical organizations. So that would sort of be my, I guess, bonus tip, or maybe I did talk a little bit about understanding your office politics, understanding your organization. That can be really helpful to help you sort of choose out of your managing up toolbox, what you're going to use in a particular situation.
Just so long as it doesn't become manipulative insincerity. So in the radical candor model, opposite, I think it's down the opposite quadrant, Janice, is manipulative insincerity. And I started off, you know, joking around with you about kissing up. That actually is kissing up. So when you're trying to be nuanced, we want to encourage the audience not to be manipulatively insincere with your boss.
Exactly.
You want to be straight and also careful. Like, you know, just know your boss and say things in a way that is candid and yet still addressing how he or she likes to be communicated with.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I actually do talk about what managing up is not.
Yes. And that was, that, I think, I love that. I did the same thing David did. I got to the end and I'm like, oh, thank God that Emma's got this fifth point in here.
Exactly.
I don't want to miss, though, because I went back to a question. I skipped a question. We're going to talk about bringing solutions. So I didn't want to miss that. And I mean, that's a pretty quick one to touch on, which is, you know, it's my general rule, if I'm managing up, if I have a problem or an issue, I like to come to the table with, like, not just one solution, but a couple of different solutions just to help the conversation going. But I think bosses in particular appreciate that when their direct reports come to meetings, you know, and if they are facing a challenge, that they have done a little bit of thinking around what some of the ways to address that challenge might be. So, I mean, I think that applies to working with a board too. If you're a CEO, is, you know, what are some of the ways that we can address the challenges that are going on right now? So that's a pretty simple one. Simple but not easy, as I seem to say a lot in my work.
Yeah. I say that too a lot. That a lot to clients. Like, I'm going to, you know, say something and this is going to sound very simple, but I know it's not easy.
Yes, exactly. Like, from our own practice and our own self-reflection, it's always this ongoing work for sure. So yeah, I want to talk about what managing up is not, because I think you absolutely nailed it, is that people have, it's got really bad reputation managing up. People find it a bit like, ooh. And I think it is because there's this perception that it is around, that it is about kissing up. And I would say good managing up is absolutely not kissing up, right? That's not managing up. That's not effective managing up at all. Yeah, and it absolutely is not manipulative. And I think it comes back to what I was talking about earlier around, you know, your own motivations actually is like, you know, what are you coming into this relationship? Are you coming into this relationship thinking about your own leadership skills and how you are enabling the person you're managing up with to work more effectively in their role? Or are you seeing this as a means to an end, right? I think when people see it as a means to an end, it can become manipulative. And that's just not, no one feels good when they are manipulating, being manipulated, right? So I also talked about office politics, right? Is that like, you know, office politics and culture play into this, our work all of the time. And so my distinction is, you know, good managing up is not playing office politics, but it is having an awareness and understanding of those dynamics as they might exist in your organization. It's just a wise thing to do. Yeah, it's a wise thing to know and to be familiar with those and how they tend to play out in your organization, because that makes you a more effective leader as well. So yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that managing up has gotten such a bad reputation, but I think it is because it's universally like perceived as kissing up.
Been on the receiving end of manipulative as a boss of a team of 10 and a larger one in the private sector of a couple dozen, I've been on the receiving end of both manipulative insincerity, aka kissing up, and just, well, you know, folks coming into the office facing challenges and being straight about the fact that they're facing a challenge, and here are some ways I'm thinking about it. And then you can get into what we call innovate mode. You can start to create innovative solutions. You can explore, like, what are the possibilities around this, and playing yes and games, like, oh yeah, what I love about the way you're thinking about that is like this. And so that's just great managing up. So I really appreciate, you know, those five, is it, I guess it's five questions you're encouraging the audience to look at. We're going to post a link for those who haven't seen your article. We're going to post a link in the show notes so that, well, what do you want to invite the audience to do, Emma?
Well, I would like to invite the audience. I always like to say, if you've taken the time to listen to this, you know, don't leave without committing to taking some sort of action, right? You've invested the time. So I want to know, like, what are you going to do next with what you've learned today? So if you are interested in this topic, I'd say go and read the article and just make a commitment to yourself. What's one action you might want to take when you take this back to the office, right? It can even be a small action, like, I am committing to understand, you know, better what my boss wants to achieve. So have a look and see what works for you and really make a commitment to yourself. Maybe you might like to write it down for yourself, schedule it into your calendar even. I'm big on time blocking so that you make that commitment to yourself and get an action done. So that would be my encouragement to you. Whatever that looks like for you, taking some sort of action, concrete action that's time limited, and, you know, figure out how you're going to improve a managing up relationship in your life, right? In your life. And this can apply outside the office too, right? Yeah. This is a skill that works outside the office as well as in. So do think about that. Who would you like to improve your managing up relationship with, and what action are you going to take to move that forward?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see my mom for the first time in months. And since I am the son of my mom and it's kind of a hierarchical organization, I think I'm going to look at your blog post and see, like, how could I manage up better with my mom? Because I'm going to see her for the first time since March this weekend.
I am telling you, all of these tips apply to mother managing up as well.
Exactly.
Well, and I'm, you know what, I love when I was reading it, Emma, like you have like literally like these are the questions, right? Like it's really clear. So if people haven't had a chance to read it yet, really go and read it, because it's all, everything you need is there. And you can kind of identify like which of the five is most needed for you. So yeah. So that was a fun conversation. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you.
And Emma, I would love you to tell people how they can connect with you. And then also, I know you have some exciting things coming up in the next few months. So tell us all, how can we connect with you? What do we need to know about what you're doing in the world?
Awesome. So you can find me at blueskyphilanthropy.com. And I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn. We were talking before we went live about doing live video. So I do a lot of video trainings and video posts. So check me out on LinkedIn if that's something that's of interest to you. And coming up in September, I am actually opening up my training program. It's called Major Gift Master Plan, and it's an online program that teaches a step-by-step system to raise more 5- and 6-figure gifts for your mission. So yeah, we work together over the course of 8 weeks and basically put together a fail-proof plan for you to raise more big gifts for your organization. And interestingly enough, we spend quite a bit of time delving into that mindset and psychology piece, because that, in my experience over working now with many clients and many students, really is the one thing that can make or break your success as a fundraiser. So
yeah,
that's one thing we share. So that's opening in September, and you can find more information on that on my website as well.
Yeah, and we'll link to that. And it just occurred to me as you were saying that that's some good social proof. Sign up for that class, and that'll create some good social proof for you to bring back to your organization.
Well, especially if you're in an organization that is just getting started in fundraising, or there are like some doubters on the board, getting your training can say, look, I went through this expert training, and this is what they said we need to do.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Yes. What did I say? An expert comes from more than 10 miles away and carries a briefcase.
Oh,
right?
Gosh, that made me laugh. That made me laugh so much. As somebody who was a consultant, I cracked up at that joke.
That's the great late Mo Davies. I don't know if you ever worked with Mo, but she was a wonderful mentor to me. I learned almost everything I know about major gift fundraising and capital campaigns from Mo Davies. And yeah, she was a great mentor for sure. So that was her phrase, her favorite phrase. So,
well, Emma, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate all the great insights and direction you've provided the audience in terms of managing up and how they can also increase their skill and up their game in major gifts fundraising through your training. So we encourage the audience to check out the links. They'll be in the show notes. And remind everyone that you can find the Fundraising Leadership Podcast on Spotify and iTunes and Google Podcasts. And please do rate and review this podcast if you found it useful. That really helps us keep this going. And with that, we'll say arrivederci for now, and go put it into practice.